That has become a part of everyday life, has it not? Whether it's credit card debt, mortgage debt, medical bill debt, need to manage and bring down your debt is, well, hopefully always one of your personal goals. As we've sadly come to learn, the federal government does not hold a similar goal when it comes to the national debt. The fact that even basic math doesn't provide enough of a catalyst for elected leaders change their ways adds to this dangerous economic situation. My next guest joins us to look at how we got here, why you should really care about this, and how it needs to be addressed. He's Executive Vice President with American Taxpayers Union, Brandon Arnold. Thanks for being here today, Brandon.
Thanks so much for having me.
And a website, learn more about this issue and others that the American Taxpayers Union pays attention, provides education on, ntu.org. We have that link at our homepage as well. So give us a current state of affairs when it comes to the national debt, Brandon. What kind of a situation are we in right now, number-wise?
Well, first, are you sitting down? This is not a pretty picture here. Unfortunately, we are out of control when it comes to spending. I think most Americans realize that. Most Americans that don't work in Congress or live in Washington, D.C., I should say, realize this. Our debt is skyrocketing. I think the headline figure that everyone's seen lately, $39 trillion, a staggering figure when it comes to our national debt, $39 trillion, and climbing. You know, the amazing thing to me is how quickly we've reached this debt crisis that we're facing right now. You know, you look at the national debt over the years. It was 2008 during George W. Bush's presidency, the waning days of his presidency, that we first crossed that threshold into $10 trillion of debt. Now we're poised to quadruple that as we quickly move to $40 trillion of debt. We'll hit it later this year. $40 trillion of debt. We've quadrupled that in less than 20 years. So again, you look at this rapid increase in debt that's fueled by our entitlement programs like Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and this the fastest growing program, it's not really a program, the fastest growing line item in the federal budget is the interest that we're paying on our debt. We're now paying about $1 trillion a year on our national debt just to finance this rampant spending. That's about the entire economy of Switzerland, a large country, just to finance our debt. That provides no benefit to anybody whatsoever. It's not a health care program, an educational program, or anything. All it does is pay the bills. This problem is out of control, and it's got to stop.
And let's translate this from real life into the federal budget fantasy life that we're looking at right now with the realistic numbers, as painful as they are. Personalists right now, they have their income, their household income, their individual income. They look at that and, okay, how much can I pay on my debt? And you always want the debt to be far less than what your income is going to be. That's not how it holds with the federal government. As you look at the how much of the GDP theoretically has to be dedicated now just to paying the debt that you mentioned, never mind paying back on the principal.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you're looking at the total level of spending as a percentage of our economy, which I think is a really good metric to use. Most people, when they're crafting their household budget, you know, you might spend 25% or so on mortgage, maybe another few percentage points of your monthly income on your auto payment, utilities, which if you live where I do, they're going through the roof, I think, for most of the country. But, you know, you craft this budget. We're at a point now where we are spending about a quarter of our nation's economy, almost a quarter of our nation's economy, just on the federal government, just on spending going to Washington. That doesn't include payments to our state and local governments as well. But a quarter of our budget going just, or a quarter of our total economy, I should say, going just toward the federal government. We haven't really experienced levels like this since the 1940s, coming out of the Second World War. You know, there have been some fluctuations, certainly during the financial crisis, 2008, 2009, during the pandemic. We saw a spike in spending, but we're not at war right now. Hopefully we'll stay that way. We're not at war. We're not facing a pandemic. We're not facing a major national crisis unless you consider the debt. So for to have elevated spending at this level and projected into perpetuity, essentially, it just simply doesn't make sense. This has been a voluntary choice by our Congress, by our leaders in Washington, to continue to elevate spending and to follow this ratchet approach to spending, where when we have these crises, we increase spending to address them, but but then we never revert back to the original levels of spending. We just continue to work off this elevated and ever-climbing baseline that is bankrupting our country effectively.
Just to give you an administration-by-administration example of what Brandon is describing here, you go back to two terms of Bill Clinton. He added, let's average out the numbers, about $1.5 trillion to the national debt. Move forward to George W. Bush, two terms, around just about $6 trillion in debt. That's two terms. Barack Obama, again, two terms. He added roughly $8 trillion to the national debt, two terms. If you look at Joe Biden in one term and in the first term of Donald Trump, each one of them in one term added $8 trillion to the debt. So, Brandon, it seems like, as I said back in the introduction, remedial economics and even remedial math is not really comprehended by any of these individuals, is it?
No, absolutely not. And you know, the finger pointing in Washington is one of the problems here, because everyone says, oh, the Democrats did this, the Republicans did this. What happened was Washington did this, and it doesn't matter what letter is next to your name. Unfortunately, we've got parties, politicians from both parties that have increased spending, that have acted irresponsibly, and it's going to take probably politicians from both parties to clean this up. I think Trump has done a good job on a number of areas, cutting back spending, reducing the size of the federal workforce to its smallest level in decades. I think that's important, part of the solution. I think some of the rescission, scaling back wasteful spending that we've seen, all sorts of ridiculous programs, growth in the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is fine as an entity, but it shouldn't receive federal dollars. I think all these things are a step in the right direction, but they're just kind of nibbling around the edges, and we need to take bigger steps. The big tax bill, the One Big Beautiful Bill passed last year, I think, made some important changes to the Medicaid program, common sense changes like requiring people to work before or seek work before they get federal benefits. But there's a lot more that needs to be done. So I'm hoping this is the start, building that momentum, building that muscle memory for lawmakers to start actually rolling up their sleeves and starting to take what, you know, a more fiscally responsible approach to the budgeting process each and every year, and to start to turn things around on behalf of taxpayers.
But with that, in regards to that, though, both parties are manipulative in how they want us, the people, to look at that. They say, well, we can't cut military spending, especially now with the world the shape it's in, everything we're involved with. Social Security, well, that's going to be depleted on its own. We can't touch that. Otherwise, we'll just expedite that financial cliff. Medicare, Medicaid, can't touch that, because seniors, veterans, they look at what's considered to be mandatory spending as the only place to look at. And how much of a misconception is that?
Well, it needs to be an all of the above approach. And what you described there, I think, is absolutely on point. Politicians just take their favorite programs off the table. You keep taking all the programs off the table, and then there's nothing left to reform or make cuts to. But the mandatory programs that you mentioned are consuming a larger and larger percentage of our budget. Mandatory programs, for those who aren't budget nerds that are your listeners out there, those are programs like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. That eats up the bulk of our mandatory budget. Mandatory programs are things that Congress doesn't revisit each and every year. They're just kind of on autopilot. And with three-quarters now of our budget on autopilot, all these fights that you see in Washington each and every year, every few months, it seems like these days, over shutdowns, we're not going to fund the federal government. We're actually talking about only about a quarter of the budget. When we talk about the Department of Education, Department of Homeland Security, Department of War, Health and Human Services, all these departments are only about a quarter of the budget, because all of this other spending is just on autopilot. And we need to put all of that, 100% of the spending needs to be on the table, taking a fine-tooth comb to it, spending items as small as those stupid earmarks that we see pop up, which is $1 million here or there for elephant statues and oyster research and other sorts of nonsensical programs, as well as the structural imbalance. That's really where the additional savings are, the structural imbalances that exist in Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, kind of right-sizing these programs for a modern America that reflects the fact that people are living longer, people are working longer, that we have a mess of spending and inefficiency in these programs, that all sorts of fraudsters and shady entities are abusing these programs to squeeze more dollars out of them. We need to be very, very comprehensive here, because otherwise we're looking at a huge national security problem as our debt increases and more debt is held by countries overseas that may not have our best interests in mind.
That's a whole other issue. A bulk of this debt that we're talking about is the term privately held debt. Is that the correct term?
Yes.
And that means when you're sitting there on your mortgage and you're falling behind, do you want the bank come calling in with the sheriff in tow saying we're calling on the debt, we're calling in the loan, pay up or get out? That's a case you don't want the nation to be in. Just to wrap up with Executive VP of American Taxpayers Union, Brendan Arnold, here on Issues and Ideas, why should the person right now listening care? Because, oh, that's $39 trillion. I'll be long gone before the problem's ever going to come about. And I got my Social Security, or I already know, or they're accepting or dismissing that their favorite program, the one they thought they were going to rely on, especially someone younger in their 30s and 40s. Well, that's not going to be there. So why should that person care about this?
Yeah, I love that question, Chris. I think that's a really, really important thing for people to think about. These aren't just numbers on a page in a ledger book in Washington, D.C. You see this increased spending actually push up things like mortgage rates, higher interest rates caused because markets are flooded by government debt way more than they ought to be. You see it pushing up things like inflation. If we could reduce inflation by reducing spending and getting our budget under balance. And then you look at programs, you mentioned Social Security. Social Security is going to go bankrupt. The trust fund is going to be depleted in about 6 years now. So people that are running for the United States Senate this November, they're going to face, if projections hold, at the end of their term, this depletion date for Social Security, at which point we're looking at benefit cuts to the tune of 25-30% for Social Security recipients, or you need to have massive tax increases or transfers from other programs, higher debt, in order to make sure that seniors are getting the checks that they're relying upon. This is an enormous crisis, but it's a slow-moving crisis, and it will affect retirees, it will affect families, small businesses. Across the board, it's going to affect us, let alone our future generations. Of course, we want to hand off this country's finances in better shape than we received it to our kids and grandkids and so forth.
That's really, if you're financially drowning, you don't want to pour more red ink into the pool and just further the amount of people who are going to drown that much faster. And I want to give you the website again, ntu.org, for the American Taxpayers Union, because they also did a survey that showed, thankfully, a lot of American citizens realize who's to blame on all this. It's not an, oh, well, what are you going to do type of attitude, or, oh, well, we really can't do anything about it attitude. People see what the cause of the problem is, what the effect of the issue has become, and that might be one of the major catalysts, too, for why we are going to see whatever the results wind up being coming up this November in the midterms. Again, you can find that and more at ntu.org, the website for the American Taxpayers Union. He is our Executive Vice President, Brendan Arnold. Brendan, thanks for the insights and the, well, ability to understand why this is so painful, and but at the same time, the importance of understanding why this needs to be addressed. Thanks for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.